Ladies and gentlemen, from the golden microphone of the EIB, it's El Rushbo, reminding you that unless I'm trapped in a drug-addled hillbilly heroin haze, I never listen to the promise of tomorrow. And now, liberal alert, here comes the colonel.
Oh, yeah, I can hardly take it. Rush Limbaugh now wants to be on the program. Welcome back. The second half hour, the promise of tomorrow, here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. We're going to get back to our interview with Michael Quinn, the Vice President of Corporate Strategy and Chief Technology Officer of Encore Electric Delivery. In the last half hour, we were talking about the bane of rolling blackouts and about how we've had them here in North Texas and about how unattractive that is with new companies wanting to move into the area. What is Encore Electric Delivery able to say about rolling blackouts? And we've got our old friend back with us. Diane Collier is going to tell us about what's going on with MetroCon and all those good things. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let you and I step over here to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help
you? Okay. We had to throw in the coins to do it, but here is the spirit of the fountain. He has awakened. Who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain, here's an easy one for you. The Strait of Malacca. The Strait of Malacca links the South China Sea with what ocean? Oh, Spirit of the Fountain?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Yes. We cannot fool the Spirit of the Fountain. The Strait of Malacca, he knows that, and so do you. Everybody knows that. The Strait of Malacca links the South China Sea with the Indian Ocean. Absolutely. All right. Back to our program. Okay, we're back with Michael Quinn. He's the Vice President of Corporate Strategy and Chief Technology Officer for Encore Electric Delivery in North Texas. And when we broke at the half hour, we were talking about rolling blackouts and how they happened not too long ago, and that new firms wanting to move in to North Texas, are maybe not interested in electric delivery system is going to have rolling blackouts.
The event that you're talking about a number of years ago was exactly that. It was an incredibly cold stretch for Texas, several days of sub-freezing weather, and so there were several generators that tripped off in relative short succession of each other. And so at that point, you did in fact have a mismatch between generation and load. And when you get that, if there is no other generation available to you in the immediate next hour, you do have to do something to restore that harmony and balance to the grid. And if you can't bring generation on, you're required to curtail load. And that's what you saw or experienced, was those short duration events. And so I think ERCOT, as well as the companies like Encore, do a real good job about looking out there and saying, what's the need from a capacity standpoint or a customer load standpoint? And in fact, do we have enough generation to serve it? In fact, ERCOT does an analysis on a year-by-year basis, and they look out several years in advance to make sure, hey, that we're going to have the energy needed to serve the load of the customers in Texas. And so, it's a collaborative approach. That's one of the things I really like about our industry, is we're happy to have those meaningful conversations with those folks that need that information from a planning perspective. It's a very customer focused industry, and that's what I really like about it.
Well, when we spoke last year with the Texas grid, I believe you told me that there was about 20% of electricity that is held in reserve and isn't used except for these emergency situations, and it's really just generated and not even used unless you have to call upon that. Is that still the case, or are you able to streamline that a little bit?
ERCOT always looks at what that reserve margin is. That's not necessarily Encore's role, but ERCOT, the independent system operator, does in fact look at that. Mm-hmm. And any time that they believe that reserve is going lower than they're comfortable with, they will, in fact, bring the next generating unit on. The intention of ERCOT is to have a reliable and stable grid. And so they're always looking at that next contingency. What happens if we were to lose plan A or plan B? What would we do from an electric grid standpoint? What would we do from a next generation resource standpoint? And so they're very focused on, and I'll use the word contingency planning. They want to know, hey, it's stable now, but if we were to lose something, how do we maintain that stability? And so it's a constant focus of them.
And coal is still, I guess, the major source. That's most reliable. Fire up a coal plant anytime we want to, and instant power. We don't have to worry about whether the wind is blowing or the sun is shining or anything else. But is coal still about 45-48% of the source for the power?
Coal itself is actually reducing in ERCOT itself. I don't have the statistics at my fingertips, but it would not surprise me if natural gas right now is the more dominant fuel source for generation in Texas. But I will tell you, renewable energy, both in the wind and solar sector, are growing substantially in Texas. And what I mean by that, utility scale, 100 megawatt solar farms or 100 megawatt wind farms. Right now, Texas has more wind than any state in the United States. A lot of people associate Texas with either lignite, you know, coal generation or natural gas. ERCOT and Texas, we're on the way to having 18,000 megawatts of wind energy connected to the electric grid. And so we dwarf every other state by a long shot. In fact, if I remember the statistics right, you can take the next two, three, or four states that have wind energy, and they still don't add up to what's in Texas.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. I was in California this past March, and coming out of Bakersfield, I think it was, that the wind was just incessant, and there were wind farms everywhere on the horizon. And I thought California must be really the wind state, but you tell me it's Texas, so that's
it absolutely is Texas. If you get in a car and get on Interstate 20 and start driving west, you'll be pretty impressed by the landscape.
Yeah. All right, and the solar that you're talking about—that's really solar hydro, isn't it? It's not photovoltaic.
No, it is photovoltaic, and so that's actually probably the thing that I would highlight that's changed the most since we visited last time is really the rate of change of the technologies from both a performance standpoint as well as a price point standpoint. When there's purchase power agreements that are being signed now that are on par with what a natural gas plant can generate at. And so that's why you're starting to see the proliferation of solar, and you certainly have of wind. Is it's not just that it's a green technology. They're becoming on the same cost basis of traditional generating sources. And so that's really, to me, is what's really going to drive technology adoption. Is it's just not the social element or the need for a low carbon solution. People look at it and have a tendency to get real focused when you're talking about an impact in their wallet. And so these technologies are, as I said, getting on par with other traditional or more mainstream or, you know, established generation sources. And so that's, people really stand up and take notice.
Well, Michael Quinn, you're always so informative, and always a joy to have you on the program. I certainly do appreciate it. What have we missed? Is there some message you want to get to the listeners today that I forgot to ask you?
The only other technology that we wouldn't specifically talk about is energy storage. And if I was going to highlight one particular technology to really watch in the next 5 years, it would be energy storage. The ability of energy storage to play multiple roles on the electric grid or in the consumer's home is rapidly developing. And so if I was going to ask your listeners to to look at one particular technology or watch how that develops, I'd highlight energy storage right now.
Well, energy storage now, we're not just talking batteries, because the growth of batteries has been slow, although it's really picked up in recent years, and I guess maybe you want to expand on that a little bit, but I think of flywheels. Are you using flywheels more now for energy storage?
We don't particularly have any flywheels on the electric grid right now. Oncor does have a handful of lithium-ion battery storage technology that we've got deployed and are testing the value stream, but also its impact on our customers. And so flywheels, energy storage, another one that is being looked at is pumped hydro storage. And so there's different technologies, but I did kind of lump them all together in energy storage. But the value, the performance, and the price point of all those is moving the right direction. So I see that being part of the future of the grid as well.
Well, pumped hydro storage, you really need some hilly country for that.
Yeah, Texas is probably not your preferred location for that.
Yeah, and of course that's interesting, because you could use energy that is normally wasted. Solar during the day, creating energy that you're not really using but keep in reserve to store through flywheels or hydro or any number of other methods. But right at the moment, I guess lithium ion batteries are the most logical. But do you expect a big advances in battery storage? Because it still isn't what it's been so painfully slow in battery development over the past 100 years.
It has, but I'll tell you, for the last several years, the price point on lithium-ion storage has moved down 16% annually, and so that's a pretty marked notice and drop. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's the preferred technology or will be proliferated in the next year, but I think in the next 5 years, you're going to see a fairly substantial amount of energy storage on the grid. And we were talking about outages and customers. I'll tell you, Oncor does have a few energy storage devices that are on the distribution electric grid, and if for some reason those customers, if the feeder they're on trips off, those customers have a limited duration of backup capacity that they can immediately draw on. And so those tests that I alluded to, think through if pick a number, 5 years from now, we could essentially have no power outages on the residential grid. How does that impact your life? If you could ensure that you had a Kroger or a Dairy Queen or the bank that always had energy, how does that improve the productivity? How does it positively impact our customers' lives? Those are the things that we're starting to think about.
Are you forecasting that's going to be the case?
I do. If you'll let me be a little bit dodgy and tell you the exact timeline I think it's going to happen on, I can't predict. But I do believe that that's the expectation of our customers, is we have low-cost, reliable energy, and in an effort to enhance reliability, if in fact you could bring a technology like energy storage onto the grid to try and substantially reduce the number of outages, I think that's something that we've got to take real seriously and look to see how would we cost effectively integrate it into the grid.
All right. Michael Quinn, Vice President, Corporate Strategy, Chief Technology Officer, Oncor Electric Delivery. A fascinating guest, as you always are, and we look forward to having you back again from time to time with these updates. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Right now, we're going to go to the phones. We've got a real treat. We have an old friend with us. A lady we've known for a number of years, Diane Collier. She, this year, is the chairman of the 29th annual conference, MetroCon, Innovating for Society. Lockheed Martin's a major sponsor, so is Oncor. and a number of others. And this is really, Diane, this is your second year, I think, to be the chairman. Is that right?
Yes, it is. We had a great year last year. Seven tracks, all very interesting material. And so we're working on doing it again for 2016.
You made such an impression with your leadership last year that the committee begged you to please stay on and come back and be tortured again putting the show together this year. All right.
Well, they didn't have to twist my arm very hard. I've been involved with the conference a lot of those 29 years, so I've got a lot of background in it.
Yeah, really,
I remember it back when it was two.
Yeah, you're an old hand. Actually, I remember because you and I have been dealing together with IEEE functions for a number of years now. So this is nothing new for you. This is the 29th straight year for MetroCon, and it's highly respected. And it's a one-day conference, which is what is really amazing, is because you're able to get all these people together, all these neat things going on for one day. And there's a lot of other conferences that do 2 and 3 days and more. They wonder how you do it, how you get it all together. I mean, do you have any insight for us?
Well, it takes lots of planning. We start the next conference as the last one ends. We've got folks that have been involved with it for a number of years, and we cycle new people in to try to keep it fresh. What some of the multi-day conferences it has is a lot of people who travel. This one is primarily local, and so we're able to give people a break out of their work day into a training atmosphere and a networking atmosphere where they can get away from the office but still be building their technical background and their careers. And it's been a growing thing for a number of years.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to see it grow and sponsors coming aboard that really are pretty far flung. I remember last year Landis Gear came in. They're the ones who make the smart meters for us with Encore. I think they're coming back again this year. We're supposed to know here in a little bit. But so the sponsors have really grown widely. And I understand that unlike a lot of conferences that IEEE does and others that are marginal, that really MetroCon pays the bills and actually is a pretty good fundraiser for the organization.
Yes, it's taken us a while to get there, but this last year we had the best year fiscally ever, so we're able to put on other programs within the section. We do some reach out with programs that involve STEM studies, and so it gives us a greater base to improve the conference and to put on other programs within the area.
Yeah, well, that's the reason, I guess, is you're so highly respected and really noticed, quite frankly, far and wide. I mean, I hear people talking about MetroCon in all different parts of the country. They've asked me about it. Some of the things this year you're expanding upon, like systems and software track. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Let's see, the track chair for that is Steve Carr, and he's got a co-chair, Pascal Ronda. And they're out of Lockheed Martin, and they've got a good number of folks that are from Lockheed speaking in that track, and also an old friend of ours that's been there several years, John Robb, who's at UTA, is going to be speaking on mutation testing. Let's see, we also have Ali L. Karabi from Hewlett-Packard, and I think they have another speaker that's going to be very interesting that they're lining up soon.
All right, that's cool. I believe, last I heard, and tell me if it's still in the works, but there's going to be a speaker from IBM. Has that been confirmed?
Yes, our keynote speaker is Romelia Flores from IBM. She is a IBM Distinguished Engineer and Master Inventor, and she's going to be talking about their Watson project. Now, Watson is really a lot of different things, and really ties in with our computational intelligence track. As you can take information and using Watson, grow that information to evaluate potential outcomes. And she'll be talking about, I think, an application that applies to the energy industry, among other things. We're not limiting her. She is really a fantastic speaker, and we're really excited to have her.
Okay, so she's really kind of still developing the things that she's going to be talking about, and I guess we'll know more about that as the weeks and months go on leading up to MetroCon. Which, incidentally, we should mention right now, it's October 26th at the Arlington Convention Center. We'll mention that again before the program is over with. I presume that she might have something to do with that, developing and deploying secure systems, too. The cybersecurity, is she going to address any of that, or do you have other experts there?
Well, we have other experts there. That track is led by Philip Todd and Princy Mehta of Lockheed Martin. You notice we have a lot of folks involved from Lockheed.
Mm-hmm.
They have a speaker coming in from FBI office. And, of course, we don't have a name for that person because they will maintain their security.
Sure.
We also have... others to be named soon.
All right, that's good. Diane Collier, the chairman for the 29th straight year of MetroCon. This is her second year as chairman. A highly respected conference, and it's immersed in new ideas, going on at the Arlington Convention Center October 26th. More can be found about that at metrocon.org. And we look forward to having you back again, Diane, and updating us on the conference as it grows.
All right. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us. Bye-bye. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
It's all about teamwork. It's all about teamwork and networks. It's people who really make the difference. I hire the person who I think can do any job, regardless of whatever it is. And that's just an extraordinary talent. And just enable those folks and get out of their way. And the best thing you can do, and this goes back from my time in the Navy, the best thing you can do is create an organization which functions well when you're not there. And the most efficient organizations are the ones that function the best when the boss isn't there. And those are the ones that I really highly regard. So, Stephen G. Smith, I'm the Director of Disaster Planning and Risk Management at the U.S. Small Business Administration. And I'm also the coordinator of SBA's Advanced Defense Technology Innovation Clusters.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
Waiting for you. I am waiting for you.